Need for Speed.
This is the 70s versus the 80s podcast. If you like to play volleyball on the beach with no shirt on, wearing your long jeans, rubbing baby oil all over yourself, with the other guys listening to Kenny Loggins' B-sides in the background, this is the perfect podcast for you. Hello, everybody. I am Wolfman Mike from Minnesota. And as always, I am joined from Jim. From Arizona. He's my co-host, as always, and today we have a special new guest, our very own King of Queens. He's the host of the Hood Rat Recap podcast, the world famous. He is Gasper from New York, and Gasper sounds like this.
I wonder if Carly McGillis was approached, because, like, would she have worked for this movie? Like, she's definitely has not aged as well as Tom Cruise has. I'll put it that way. So it wouldn't really work for her as the love interest per se, although you could write her in as another character. Meg Ryan, I would imagine, probably wanted too much money to be worth the time.
And then I forgot to tell you what Jim sounds like. Jim sounds like this.
You know, I think one of the reasons why they brought in Ed Harris for this is because in the first Top Gun, when Maverick and Maverick and Goose. They go in and that there's a bald-headed guy yelling at him, "You guys made Top Gun!" Yeah, yes. And he's that bald, short guy that was in all the submarine movies or whatever. Well, Ed Harris kind of brings that sort of role back into this movie, you know, filling that caricature of what we think of.
As you can guess, today we are talking some Top Gun versus Maverick. And then a little later, we're going to talk about waiting in line for your very first concert. So let's get into it.
If Kenny Loggins even plays that song after that movie.
I know. It's like that song could not be released today. I'm saying not with that title. Maybe Hanging with the Boys. Or something like that.
So today, as you can figure out, we're talking Top Gun versus Maverick, and we will be given spoilers. Usually we don't have to say this because we're always talking from movies about the 70s and 80s, but we will be given spoilers to both movies. So
tune away from this if you don't want to be spoiled.
Okay, so you guys saw both movie, or you saw the new movie, and I know you saw the old movie a long time ago or just recently, and what are we all thinking about it, Jim?
My first impression was that I don't like the second film as much as I like the first film, which, you know, I mean, the first film was fantastic when you're 14, 15 years old, but I just thought it to be overindulgent in some places, and I don't think that they did a lot of, or I think they did too much hearkening back to the old film in corny ways, like Miles Teller playing Great Balls of Fire. I just didn't think that added a lot to the movie. And I'll get into more of that as we go, but that was my first impression.
I kind of liked it, actually. I thought it was a good popcorn movie. I agree, it's not as good as the first one. I don't think you could capture that same lightning in the bottle. But what I liked about it is that it did follow the formula of a Top Gun, in that it was a fun movie and they did not get into any kind of a message outside of the storyline. Like, they weren't trying to teach us anything. There wasn't any kind of a political message. It was just like, hey, these pilots, and this is what they're doing. Like, even to the fact of, like, who the enemy is at the end, like, just like Top Gun, we don't know. It could be Russia, it could be China, yeah. It could be anybody. It's just bad guy with, you know, the possibility of making a nuclear weapon must be stopped. And I thought that was cool.
It's a great point. Fantastic point, because mm-hmm. It's really easy nowadays to start, you know, that's why the TV series MacGyver got so lousy, is because every show had to be a anti-this right. or anti-that, and that's a great point. Fantastic point.
Well, I liked the movie quite a bit. I thought, you know, I thought some parts were better than the original. I mean, I can see
Jim makes a good point. When they brought his son out there and he was kind of dressed like him, I was like, oh, do we have to do this again? But they even did the Great Balls of Fire song again, which I was like, but then
exactly.
And you know, I thought it was corny, but like in a good way. And I just think it's a throwback. We don't have these big Hollywood movies anymore. Like you said, we didn't have a message. We didn't know who the bad guy was. It was just a big Hollywood movie that we don't really seem to get that much anymore. It was just a blockbuster. It wasn't, you know, that didn't have a Marvel superhero in it or whatever. It was just an old-fashioned big movie. So I thought it was kind of refreshing in that way.
It did leave me with one question, which I went with my brother and his wife, and she really knows Top Gun way better than I do. And at the end of the movie, we walked out, and I'm like, am I supposed to know who the love interest is? Because, like, they're acting like I'm supposed to know her, and I don't. And she's like, yeah, that's Penny. Remember the story in the bar that Meg Ryan tells? And I'm like, okay, I get it now. But they kind of went in all in on that. Like, yeah, you know Penny. And it's like, we never met Penny in the first movie.
Yeah, they kind of overassumed that. That's another great point. Automatically know that. I do agree with that, yeah.
Just to go piggyback on what Gasper said, and then also what Mike said, is that the enemy wasn't they didn't come out with who the enemy is, and I don't think they did in the first one either. I think both movies it was kind of ambiguous who the bad guy is, and that makes it a lot more palatable for every audience, as opposed to every audience except for Russia.
They're white guys that have a lot of Russian planes. That's all we really know about them. And they have a snowy.
Yeah, exactly. They live in the snow. With the hammer and sickle covered up by an STP sticker or something. And then, Mike, what you said, every single movie has a Marvel character in it right now. I mean, it comes out, it's Aquaman or it's this or that. And I'm getting tired of them.
Aquaman's DC.
I don't like him to begin with, but oh, that's true. Just, but you know what I mean, though. Every film coming out, every blockbuster Christmas or summer movie is another Spider-Man or Aquaman or whatever it is.
It's not really a complaint because I think it worked. But what did you think about Maverick kind of having the Star Wars ending, where they basically had the same storyline as Star Wars for the last half hour there? Where they have to go get the perfect shot off at the target as they're getting shot at.
It was almost exactly like Star Wars, actually. When you, so I brought that up to a friend of mine, and he made a good point. Is that, well, Star Wars is based on the military. Basically, it's like those scenes, those storylines that they got from are basically military storylines that they kind of co-opted for Star Wars. So it's Top Gun taking it back, you know. But I agree, it was exactly the same as A New Hope.
Again, with the Star Wars comparisons, is it's amazing. You know, Star Wars came out in 77. The original Top Gun came out in 86. So I can't believe they're only 9 years apart. It seems like they were 20 years apart. But isn't that crazy?
God, yeah.
But so we know how they did the fight scenes in both Top Guns. They used actual planes, and then of course in Star Wars they used all models, and they both work. It's incredible that they both work. They're both good fight scenes, and they're done like incredibly different ways. What do you guys think?
Well, in this film, when you know Maverick kind of comes rolling into the hangar and they've got that big plane sitting there, and the guy comes over to tell him that, hey, you're not going to roll today because some admiral thinks we could spend the money elsewhere. That plane sitting there looks like an SR-71 to me. I don't know what you guys think, but that was a plywood and 2x4 mock-up that they made. So that was not a flyable plane. It wasn't even a real plane. It was just kind of a mock-up. And the way that they would have done that in the 70s or the 80s, it wouldn't have looked anywhere nearly as realistic as this plane looked in this movie. So if you're hinting about technology, I agree with you that they've come a long way.
And I'll just jump in here quick. I just think both the original Top Gun from 86 and the original Star Wars, I think they hold up really well. The fight scenes, like I still, every time I see them, That's like my, they both have my favorite. I love that when the pilot's like whipping his head like back and forth in the cockpit going, "Oh, where'd he go? Where'd he go?" You know? Yeah. So I think they both do a good job with that.
So you, you bring up planes, and to be fair, I don't know planes on site. Like, I couldn't tell you one from another, but I've always heard a trivia, thing that I don't know if it's true or not, but you might be able to tell me. In the first Top Gun, how many actual MiGs are in the movie? And the answer I was told was there are no MiGs in Top Gun because at the time, they were needed for war. So they kind of like dressed up, F-18s, I guess, to be MiGs. Is that true?
That sounds right. Yeah.
No, I did not know that.
And I know in the new movie, of course, they had to use CGI on the Russian planes because, you know, because
the enemy planes, yes,
the enemy planes,
the enemy planes, because of course they're not just going to give them to us to just make a movie with, and
well, you're right. When you said a minute ago about how well those films hold up, I think that just shines the light on really well-made movies that are able to give that suspension of disbelief so that you believe that it's true. So they hold up really well because they're very well-made movies, well enough to suspend the disbelief that this could never happen.
Yeah, I thought...
or something like that.
I thought in this movie, in the new movie, like when he goes inverted and like in the original movie, you could kind of tell it was split screen when they did that. And this one, it really looked real, I thought. Right. So.
Yeah, that's the CGI that you're talking about.
Yeah. And then like they did the one CGI. I like it's the only part where they swear in the movie where they drop the F-bomb is like when that Russian plane or whatever starts floating like a leaf. Like it just starts doing some technology they didn't even know was possible. That was pretty cool. But.
Yeah, like a flat rotate spin. I wonder if that's possible. if a plane could just do it like a flat, you know, 360 degree spin and fly away.
Yeah, I was thinking
maybe a Harrier. Maybe I've seen
those type of planes, but that actually would happen at a lower speed, I would imagine, right? Like the Harriers don't just turn on a dime like that. They'd have to actually stop and
Yeah, correct. I don't know if that's possible or not. I know if you're in a flat spin out of control that it's going to do that, but a controlled flat spin, I don't know if that's possible or not.
So I was doing some research, and I guess Kelly McGillis is still alive, and Meg Ryan, too. What do you guys think about them not being in the new movie?
I wonder if Kelly McGillis was approached, because, like, would she have worked for this movie? Like, she's... definitely has not aged as well as Tom Cruise has. I'll put it that way. So it wouldn't really work for her as the love interest per se, although you could write her in as another character. Meg Ryan, I would imagine, probably wanted too much money to be worth the time. Because you don't have Goose anymore. Like, she's easy to... Did they actually specify if the mother was still alive with Rooster or not?
There's a line in the movie where Tom goes, "I promised his..." Because that's, remember, he keeps him out for 4 years or whatever. Right. And he goes, I promised his mother before she died that let him do this. He just says it really quick, and I don't blame you for missing it because I almost missed it. I was like, wait, did he just say Meg Ryan's dead? Right. But yeah. So.
I'm having, my cats are in a fight. It reminds me about when I was 12 and my sisters would fight. You know, I doubt whether Kelly McGillis was approached because Hollywood, every actor has to be pretty, and she's not, you know, what they would deem to be pretty anymore. It's kind of awful. But, you know, Meg Ryan, I don't know if you've seen her lately, but she has definitely taken advantage of different technologies for, you know, she doesn't even look like the same person anymore.
So we're saying they brought Jennifer Connelly in just because of her looks that the other two couldn't get live up to.
Yeah, I mean, Tom Cruise is 60, almost 60 years old. And, you know, what's her name? Is in her 30s, probably. I guess I don't know for sure, but definitely not over 40. I think
she is in her 40s.
Even if she was.
Let me look.
Is she okay? But still, that's 20 year.
Right, but 20 year
difference
kind of doesn't look as old as he is.
Oh, she's 50. She's 51. 50. Yeah, 51.
Oh wow. Okay.
Oh, is she?
She's,
okay.
She's probably 49 when they shot the movie or something. This, yeah, movie was shot 3 years ago. It was supposed to be a 1919 or a 2019 release. Right. Yeah.
I would get pissed off every month when Redbox came and there wasn't that movie on there. I'm like, what the fuck is the holdup on this movie?
So, yeah. So, Tom Cruise, we know he doesn't age because... My theory is that he's an alien, space alien, that's just mimicking human behavior. That's why he's got that big, he's got a bigger smile than any human. He laughs bigger than anybody. He never ages.
Isn't it probably part related of Scientology that they go back to the mothership at some point? There's like a whole, I don't know. My knowledge about Scientology comes from South Park, to be fair. So
that was a great, well, great episode. Oh, that was such a great, that was such an epic episode of that.
Yes, that I was about to say the same thing.
Fantastic episode of that show.
It's him and John Travolta and Tom Cruise in the closet. That's a, that was a great episode.
I don't. Can we segue into that for a second, Mike? What we think about? Yeah, what we think about John Travolta? Are we closeted? Are we out? What do we think on that?
I don't know.
Evidently not much. Okay, we can move on.
In the original Top Gun, we had Tom Cruise doing his... When they added the love scene in after, so it was kind of shot in a blue light. It looks different than the rest of the movie. Right. And then we have Tom Cruise doing his little lizard probing kisses. remember, when you're 16 or 15 watching that movie, it kind of confused the hell out of you. Like, is that what I'm supposed to do? Or...
A generation of kids grew up knowing, not knowing how to kiss because of Top Gun. We should probably about the music and compare that. It's the last time we sat down, that was a big part of it. And now you kind of know what the story is with both movies.
Okay. Well, you start us out talking about the music, Gasper.
One of the things that strikes me, like comparing the two movies, is that so the original Top Gun, like, made careers. There were hit songs out of there that kind of put people on the map. And this Top Gun doesn't really do that. And they don't have the soundtrack that even kind of comes close to what the original was. I mean, because you had Berlin and you had Kenny Loggins and all that. And they were not really... you know, at the level that they were at prior to Top Gun. And Lady Gaga has the title track of this, right? And then they didn't really swing for the fences with any of the songs, I thought. What'd you guys think?
I agree.
I agree with you, and I think one of the reasons for that is that music isn't the same anymore. When we were kids, we always had KS95 on or W... What was it? 99.5 or 101. Yeah, we had those, and they would pre-release the songs a few weeks or months before the movie would come out, and then the movie would come out and just ingrain that song in you, and then after that, we would have the radio on and hear it every day. Right. Music isn't released like that anymore. It's singles and dance hits or whatever, but they... You turn on the radio and it's just not the same as it used to be.
I agree.
And I just think that's the way that musicians' careers were made back then, was that, hey, I'll give you a couple of test spins here, we'll see how people like it. Nowadays, they release it on the computer, so it's not broadcast anymore. It's just a different thing altogether. I don't know what you think,
Mike. It's really amazing the soundtrack worked for the first movie because it was a... Toto was meant to do the title song, and then Kenny Loggins took it.
Right.
And then I know the Motels did like a version of Take Your Breath Away, and I listened to it because it is on YouTube, and it sounds really, almost the same as Berlin. I think Berlin had a little bit better, like a little bit better voice, I think. And she kind of did it a little better speed, a little more dramatic than the Motels did. So it's just amazing. Those songs were just kind of like made to be put into a movie and they all worked. And then, and yeah, like you said, then they just bring in a big famous person like Lady Gaga. And I don't even remember the song at all. I don't remember how it went. I don't remember when they used it. I don't remember.
I think it was just in the credits at the end, but. You think about Take My Breath Away, like all of those records that you know, those like greatest hits records that come out, the, you know, That's My 80s or This Is 80s Now or whatever it is, it's like you can't have one of those records without Take My Breath Away. It's that's a everyone's expecting that song to be on it.
Yeah, exactly.
I couldn't name you another Berlin song, but I know that song. And you don't have anything like that here. Like you don't even really have a memorable Lady Gaga song when you think about it. Like, it's funny.
Yeah, and what those songs are supposed to do is when you hear them, make you think of where you, you know, where you were when you heard them first or whatever. So that when that Berlin song comes on, it's boom, 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 boom. Watching every motion in my foolish love's game. All this endless ocean fight. I think of Tom Cruise and Kelly McGillis kissing. Having yeah. sex. You know, yeah, exactly. And it's, you know, the black and white, you know, not black and white, but, you know, in gray tones because they're in bed, or big flowing white billowy sheets, and, you know, after the scene ends, water coming out somewhere to give us the Freudian, you know, image. But that's what I think about when I hear that song. Same with the Kenny Loggins. If I heard, you know, Playing with the Boys, I would think of the Flyover. You know, songs do what they're supposed to do.
Agreed.
And then, what did you guys think of the flyover he did over Ed Harris in this movie? That was a real wave burst that he stepped into. That was not simulated.
That was pretty cool.
Did that. Yeah, I mean, it lifted that other plane off the ground, which was a set piece, but it originally was a plane. But you see the ground and Ed Harris taking that burst to the face. That's pretty adventurous for an actor, I think, in today's acting world. They don't do a lot of their stunts anymore.
Yeah, and I like how they didn't repeat everything. Like, they didn't buzz the tower, but he kind of did, because, like, when he had to land at the end, he's like, I'm going to have to bring it in close to the tower. And he kind of did it like he had to do it or whatever, but yeah.
Old Maverick could have figured out a way to get that plane down without buzzing the tower.
And he just—I don't know why, but like when he, it was so cool how they got stopped in the net at the very end. But he was like, I would have liked to have seen him go, oh, I bruised my ribs or something, and then they would have showed him in like bandages. Something should have happened to him because it was such a physical experience he had. What did you guys think of the Mission Impossible? Yeah. Like right in the middle of the movie, they put like a little Mission Impossible scene where he's running in the snow from the machine gun, and then they have to go hijack a plane.
Right. That's probably one of like the weirdest part of the whole movie. So that's how they, after
I don't remember
they,
that scene,
after they blow up the, after they complete the mission and they make their shot,
they blow up the Death Star.
Him and Rooster go down in behind enemy lines and now have to get out. And so they literally run across the snow in the woods to where the enemy encampment is, and they're like, all right, we're going to steal a plane out of their hangar. And it's like, all right, this is where it starts to get like a little unbelievable.
Yeah.
But it was a cool scene. It was fun. Like, what did you think about, so he's in the movie for such a short period of time, but I love Ed Harris. I feel like he's always great in whatever role he's in. But then they bring in John Hamm to be the, you know, the adversarial, overhead command guy. And one, it kind of cracks me up because I feel like John Hamm will absolutely play any part you ask him to play. It'll just be like, hey, John Hamm, you want to be in my school play? He'll be like, yes, I want to be in the school play. But yeah. I kind of felt like that role could have been played by Ed Harris pretty easily. Like, and why would they bring in John Hamm?
I feel like Ed Harris said you got a day. They got 1 day to shoot with him is what I feel okay. like. And then John Hamm came. Yeah. I like John Hamm, though. He always plays the same. Like, you're right. He always plays John Hamm. He always plays, like, it seems like he always plays this character that's right. You can't argue with anything he says, but you hate him. You're like, I hate this guy. But he's right, but I hate him. It seems like that's the role he...
That just makes him a great actor.
Yeah. I mean, I really like him. I liked Mad Men. I like him when he shows up in movies, but it does seem like he shows up in everything. Like, he's got the attitude of like, hey man, it's a job, I'm taking it. You know?
He's in a Prudential commercial now where he's like, is that the one with Mel where he tries to date that girl Mel? I don't know. Yeah, you're right. He's in everything.
No, I think one of the reasons why they brought in Ed Harris for this is because in the first Top Gun, when Maverick and what was his buddy's name again? Maverick and Goose. They go in and that there's a bald-headed guy yelling at him, you guys made Top Gun! Yeah! Yes. And he's that bald, short guy that was in all the submarine movies or whatever. Well, Ed Harris kind of brings that sort of role back into this movie, you know, filling that caricature of what we think of. That was my take on it. And I agree with Mike. It was probably a one-day thing that's, right. You know, Ed's going to be here. You know, everybody except for Tom Cruise is the second seat in that movie, though. We know that.
Do you guys, when you were watching it, did you think of it as Tom Cruise or Maverick? I mean, I don't know how I
thought, to me, he's totally believable in whatever he does, and that just makes him, you know, the best actor. Again, we talk about suspension of disbelief, and I think he's able to do that in every movie. You know, starting with that one, that, The Color of Money, is that what it was? The Color of Money?
That's such a good movie.
He's just so easy to love in everything, and I don't want to because he's kind of a dick in real life, but he's just so damn good in everything. I don't know if you guys concur with that or not, but, you know, to me, in real life, all I hear is that he's condescending and that he's demanding and makes people avert their eyes when he walks through. And, you know, that type of thing, to me, he's not a likable human being. But in the movies, he's just a fantastic actor. Got to give it to him.
Yeah, totally.
You guys agree or...
Yeah, I still think he's a space alien just mimicking human behavior, but yeah.
He's definitely aged well. I know that when he first started out, he had a bad mouth. He had, you know, bad teeth. And so they said, well, if you're going to do this role, we got to fix your teeth. And he went in and, you know, came out with the chiclet smile, like Mike said before. He's got that big chiclet smile. Looks like a character, you know, like a cartoon when he smiles. His whole face turns into a...
What did you guys think at the beginning when he goes, hey, I'm Tom Cruise and thank you for coming to watch this movie? I thought he was going to say this one's for the troops or something. And then it was just like, he just said, thanks for watching this movie. And I was like, but I don't... What did you guys think of that? I let it go. I go...
He kind of took it more as you know, the idea of COVID and coming back from COVID and that impacted this movie so much. And a lot of movies, you know, everything pretty much coming out right now was impacted by COVID. But I think he was just acknowledging that fact and just appreciating people coming back to theaters. Because I don't know how it is by where you guys are, but the theaters are not packed by us. Like, I've been going to movies pretty semi-often. My brother likes to go to a lot of movies, so I tend to go with him. And... they're not sold out. They're not packed. Like, it's not like it used to be, for sure. And I think that's definitely COVID. So I could see why he might want to, and actors in general might want to be like, hey, thanks for coming out, because this is how we make our money, you know?
Yeah. He should have said, thanks for coming.
I think you're dead on. No,
he should have said thanks for coming out and spending $24, because if this would have went straight to HBO Max, I would have lost all my money out of the back end. And that's the reason the movie was delayed, is because he's getting paid off the back end, and if it would have went to HBO Max, he wouldn't have got nothing. Right. So
that's why we waited an extra 3 years. Interesting point. Yeah. Well, to Gaster's point about the theaters not being packed, Mike, you hit it right on. It's that half of the movies that come out today are also released streaming at the same time. So you could, not this movie, but and not the Bond movie, but a lot of movies are released simultaneously in the theaters and streaming, and it keeps people out of the theaters. I don't know how that could ever, to me, movies should be a movie first, and then you wait for it to come out. And that's how they made so much money on them. But people started taking their camcorders into theaters and recording it, and then releasing it on YouTube or whatever, and they said, well, we might as well take advantage of this, because, you know, if we don't, it's a shitty thing, but somebody's going to release it from their GoPro.
And plus, everyone's got, like, there's a digital, you know, it's not like they send the reels to the theaters anymore like they used to. They're actually sending a digital copy, so I know a lot of digital copies have leaked and were out on the torrent sites before the movie ever came out, and they're losing money that way. You're right. I also think that... So the idea of everything going direct to streaming probably was already in the works, but I think COVID impacted that quite a bit. Like it has so many different industries where, you know, like for example, like you don't have to have an office in Manhattan anymore to be considered a legitimate business. Where I remember working in Manhattan and, you know, the company I was working for was struggling to keep a rent going, because if you did not have a conference room on, you know, whatever floor in a building, you weren't a real business and you didn't attract business. Yeah. And now that attitude has completely changed to the point that they're having a hard time filling some of the offices. So I think a lot of that is similar in a lot of different industries, and definitely affected movies, where it's like, yeah, we can release a movie directly to people's homes and they will receive it that way. And so that really hurts the film industry. Kind of like the way MP3s hurt
huge
music industry, where bands don't even really think about making money on records anymore. It's the record isn't the main source of income. I mean, it hadn't been for some time, but like it really got pounded home after MP3s. And that's why you see a lot of stuff get released direct to streaming early, and things like Bandcamp and all those different services. But anyway, I'm sorry, I'm off on a tangent.
No, I was enraptured with that, because give me some perspective that I didn't know. It just drives our point home further that music is not the same as it was anymore, especially with the way that it's, you know, released from the point that it's recorded onto something and after. It's completely different now than it was in the 80s. People should know, the kid, you know, anybody that's younger than us watching this, you would hear of, hey, there's going to be a new Springsteen album coming out in March next year. And so you would wait, right? You would wait and wait and wait. And then they would release a single. And you'd be like, oh, this is fantastic. Give us more. But they're not ready to yet. You know, you still got to get your fill of this one first. And then they'd release another one. And then that's not even, the album wasn't even out yet. They're just, you know, it was out to the radio stations, but it wasn't released yet. And then the record would come out. You go out and buy the record. And then another, you know, it's completely different than the way it was. And that, I think, made a difference on the way that it was distributed to radio stations, because they're not the same anymore.
Absolutely.
So it's just a trickle-down
I remember as a kid,
thing.
Like, you would go stand online outside of Tower Records because a record was coming out, and you'd be on this gigantic...
And it was always a Tuesday. Yeah. It was always Tuesday. Released Tuesday. Now everything comes on Friday.
I've talked about that with a few friends, where it's like that, and, like, the idea of even concert tickets, like... You remember, like, sleeping out on the street with a tent because, you know, whoever was playing, and, like, I had to be somewhere near to the front to even... have a prayer to get a ticket, and now it's like, not only you don't have to wait online, everything's online, but you're going to pay like 3 and 4 times the price because of Ticketmaster and their evil scams. But yeah, that's all of that is so different. Kids will never know the struggle.
Mike, when Mike and I were, and it was that when Mike and I were 15, we heard Springsteen's coming. To, you know, he's going to play in Met Center. And he says, oh, man, we got to get tickets. I'm like, well, what, you know, how are we going to do this? Because you have to, you know, you have to do it over the phone to get tickets, because Ticketmaster was So it came down to one of us had to stay home from school and get the tickets. And the other one, I don't remember, oh, maybe give us the ride or whatever it was that we needed. So I stayed home from school. And when it hits like 12:01, you know, 12:01 p.m., it's dialing and redialing and redialing. Finally, I got through and I got the tickets. And kids don't realize that's how it was done back then. You know, I mean, if anybody even comes to town anymore, you know, the tickets are all sold online. You know, you wait in a weight room online maybe and do it, but you don't have to sit there and
there's no dial it
on the
screen.
Phone like we did. You remember that, Mike?
I've forgotten that you had stayed home to buy the ticket. And we had to use like your... I thought you went to your mom's job because she had a faster phone or something at her job. Maybe, I don't know, I'm screwing up part of the story, but yeah.
No, I stayed home. I definitely stayed home. And because I remember we had just gotten the first phone that was, you know, didn't have a cord to the base, you know, it was a cordless phone. And I just about burned that thing out, you know, trying to get these tickets. And finally I got them. And it was, Mike called me at like 1:30. Just got out of lunch. Did you get them? I got them. So that was fun. That was a fun time. Definitely. I don't remember. Who gave us the ride out there? Was that your mom?
I thought we drove out there. Because I remember there were some older guys, like, were, you know, they were in their 30s, so I thought they were so old, but they were, like, drinking out there. And they're like, let's go hang out with them. And I'm like, are you sure? Yeah, no.
I don't remember. You know, that concert would have been 84 or 85, so we wouldn't have been able to drive at that point. Because that was when, on the
board.
Wait a minute, back up.
Yeah.
Yes, you're right. That was a Tunnel of Love tour.
At that time frame,
how did you know,
Gasper? Talking, I went over my
head.
Like,
know?
That's got to be Tunnel of Love. Like, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yep. Yep, that's right. That's right. It was a Tunnel tour. Because I remember that's when he was married, but you could absolutely tell he was banging Patty Shelf. I'm like, they're fucking. There's no way they're not fucking. You know. That was such a fun time in life.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I think you drove because I didn't have my license yet. So you definitely drove us to that. And you're right. I remember I wanted to tailgate with some guys that you were just referring to. They were out there drinking. They're probably drinking like Diet Pepsi and smoking candy cigarettes.
As you do.
We were like, what? We had tickets behind the stage and like 50 rows up. So we were keeping our head back so they wouldn't, you know, the nosebleed wouldn't drip. And every once in a while, Bruce would come around the stage and wave at us. I'm like, did you see that? He waved at us. I still have the t-shirt that I bought at that concert.
I think
concert.
I still have mine somewhere too, yeah.
Do you? Yeah.
That's crazy.
Gasper, what was your first concert?
I've been going to concerts since a very young age. My old man was a huge Grateful Dead fan. So my very first concert, I could not even remember. I think I was 6 months old, but he has a picture of me and like a papoose. He was a big hippie. But the Grateful Dead was my first show. I do remember. I think it was at the Garden, and I remember there was this big biker dude, and I must have been about 7, I guess, and he had this big jug like milk would come in, but there wasn't milk in there, and he was like, hey kid, you want some apple juice? And like, even at 7, yeah. I knew that was not apple juice.
That's fantastic. And you know, I say Bruce as my first concert, it's the first one that I ever went to that I wanted to go to that we bought tickets to. My mom and dad took me to Neil Diamond and took me to John Denver.
Nice.
You know, when I was younger than that.
So if we're going with concerts, like the first one I chose to go to, that like I sought out myself, that would have been Anthrax and Ozzy Osbourne at the Coliseum. Ooh. And that I went to with my dad as well. And I remember I turned to him at the end and I'm like, what'd you think? And he goes, talking about Anthrax, like, what do you think of Anthrax? Because he was a fan of Ozzy Osbourne. He knew Black Sabbath, and like, so that was more palatable to him.
Oh, okay.
Like, what do you think of Anthrax? And he was like, oh, it sounded like every Led Zeppelin record. played at the same time. Okay.
Fair enough. Yeah. That's the hard stuff right there.
High school in New York at that time, like, you go from junior high school where everything's still kind of innocent, or at least I was, and you get to high school and everyone's got all these like t-shirts and patches, and I'm like, what's that? Heavy metal. I have to learn about this.
and you were a metalhead, pretty much, you were either
what we called a metalhead, or you were what we called a cousine, which were the guys who were like the Sergio Tacchinis, and they were listening to like TKA and that type of stuff. Freestyle was very big at that time in New York, and I definitely was not one of those guys, so I fit in more with the metalheads. Tell you, as someone who's tried to DJ and that very well, it's extremely hard to mix freestyle because it's all offbeat kind of, or it starts on, there's not a, like a 4/4 time to it.
Yeah.
There we go.
although you have vanilla ice, I don't have to do that. He was definitely was perfect. Talking about that time period, because, or at least from my perspective, because he talks about rolling in my 5.0, that was, you either had that car or you had an IROC C28 in that time, like that's what everyone in New York was driving, IROCs. It's like, and what was the cologne they would wear? They would wear.
I remember that car.
Yes, it was Jacquard. Yes,
Jacquard.
Jacquard.
Yep.
Yeah.
Jacquard Noir. Back then, that and Polo were the only two colognes. You would see guys at their locker.
Yeah.
And they would just be pouring that shit on them and taking a sip of it. Especially Polo, it just bursts right through your facial bones.
Like at that time in New York, it was very much like West Side Story. It was like the metalheads versus the cousines. It was like the Jets and the Sharks.
Cousine.
I mean, that was the thing.
Italian word, like my grandma would say.
Not everyone was Italian who was into that style, but that's where it definitely was derived from. Yeah.
Huh. Cool. Have to check it out. So have we got more on Top Gun, or should we move to Father's Day, or what do you want to do, Mike?
I don't know. How much time does Gasper have?
One of the things I actually wanted to ask you guys about was, so you brought up early on the volleyball scene, and so they had the companion scene to the volleyball scene, which was that dogfighting football, they called it. Have you ever seen that anywhere before? Because that was a moment in the movie where I'm watching and going, like, this is interesting, but what the hell are they doing? You know, and then like I was so thankful that they were like, "Oh, dogfighting football," and I'm like, "Okay, cool." They made up a game.
I thought it was. Are they editing it? You know, like where they're showing both sides at the same time, and then he goes, "It's dogfighting football," and I go, "It looks cool. I see why they used it in the movie, but there's no way in real life that would work because they're both playing offense at the same time. It'd just be a race." It'd be like, throw the ball on the wide receiver, whoever gets the end zone first. But it's just,
it kind of seems like it might be fun to try, though.
Yeah. It's like, I'm going to play offense, no defense. I'm
There's
play
other off, things.
No defense, offense. Yeah. Whoa, as we get a little punchy there, it looks like it's the end of another episode. Let's check the time. I like to check my time like Tom Cruise in the beach scene where I got an Apple Watch and the only way you can see what time it is by dramatically flipping your wrist like Tom Cruise. So I do that. And thank you for joining us, everybody. Again, this is Wolfman Mike. And if you want to check me out, you can check me out on either Facebook or Twitter with MN Mike's Mini Helmet Mania. So MN like Minnesota Mike's Mini Helmet Mania. It's pretty cool. I got like a Pasadena Van Halen helmet on there. I got a bunch of rock helmets. I got a Seattle Seahawks, which has like a Nirvana, Jimi Hendrix vibe to it. I got a Minnesota Purple Rain one on there. I think you can figure that one out. That one's pretty cool. So you can always check me out at Minnesota Mike's Mini Helmet Mania. That's MN Mike's Mini Helmet Mania. You can always check. I'd like to thank
Gasper for joining us today. You can always check him out at the Hood Rat Recap, the world famous podcast about the world famous group, The Hold Steady. You can always check him out there. And if you want to check Jim out, you can always check him. He's on wait for Ticketmaster for a Kenny Loggins cover band. He knows that Kenny Loggins is still alive, but he doesn't want to spend that kind of dough. So he likes to go for the cover band kind of vibe. That's the kind of vibe Jim is. So until next time, this has been the 70s versus the 80s podcast.